It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and let's talk legal.
Let's Talk Legal with Harvell & Collins, the right advice at the right time, and Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins in the studio as usual. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Ben. Good
morning, Ben.
All right, what are we talking about today?
Ben, Wes, and I have decided that we want to kind of go back to basics today and talk about 10 very common estate planning questions, things that at these appointments that we encourage clients to make an appointment, by the way, have that consultation, which is free, by the way. There is no charge for an initial consultation at our office for estate planning by either Wes or myself. Many times people call and they say, well, what is the price of this or that? And, of course, it's difficult to name a fee, to quote a fee, without knowing what the document is going to be like. How is it going to frame up? Is it going to have a trust? Does it, you know, what are going to be the circumstances? But what we're able to do, and we do it routinely, is that we meet with the client. There's a free consultation. And after usually about 30, 40, 50 minutes or so, Wes and I are able to kind of know where we're heading and what we are going to advise for this client. And we then are able to quote a fee. The client then makes a decision. They don't have to make it that instant. They can think about it for a few days or a week, or they can come back for a second consult or make a phone call. But after some period of time, they've been quoted a fee, and then they decide whether or not to proceed. So that's the procedure. Now, some of these top 10 things. Wes, why don't I let you take the first one?
Right. We put together basically the top 10 list. These are questions that we get all the time from our clients or prospective clients regarding, you know, these various documents that we're talking about as far as the will, maybe a trust, power of attorney, these type things that we've talked about.
Yeah.
That's right. So one of the questions that we get is, you know, about the executor. You know, the executor obviously, Ben, has a very important role because this is the person who really has the job to wrap up the final affairs of the person who's passed away. And we state in our will who we want our executor to be. In many cases, usually if it's husband, wife, obviously the husband is going to name the wife and the wife is going to name the husband unless we have some type of extenuating circumstances. Like, let's say one of, the spouses has some type of cognitive deficit or has maybe a physical problem or something like that. Then usually we look to the children next. In most cases, you know, we're then maybe naming one child next and then the next one. Sometimes we name the children as co-executors to work together. That just depends on the circumstances, and it also, you know, depends on some consultation with the lawyer so the lawyer can give you some advice and guidance with regard to that. But one of the questions that we get with regard to executor is, well, okay, fine, I'll name my wife, I'll name my husband, but my children, my child lives in Seattle, my daughter, and my son lives in New York. So do I really want to name them as my successor? Or I thought that maybe I have to find someone in North Carolina.
Yeah. I would imagine that question comes up a lot for a widow or a widower, you know, because then, because it really does need to be probably one of them.
Right. And, you know, here in this area, we've got a lot of retirees from other states. We have a lot of military. So we have, I would say, our fair share of families that are spread out across across the country. So the answer to that question is really what we look toward is who is going to serve as the best executor. It really doesn't matter where they live. We deal with executors all across the country, even out of the country sometimes, and that is not a requirement under North Carolina law for your executor, your personal representative, to be a citizen and resident of North Carolina or, you know, be in this area. All you really have to do is that, you know, in the event we do have an executor who is elsewhere in a different state, then it's a very simple process of just appointing a resident process agent for the administration of the estate. And normally that's going to be the attorney who is right here in Eastern North Carolina, you know, handling the estate, whether it's in, you know, Onslow County, Craven, Pamlico, Lenore, whatever it may be. So we do get that question a lot, but really the simple question is, or the simple answer is, we would rather have an executor who is going to be accessible, whether it's email, fax, you know, telephone, whatever, someone who maybe has somewhat of a business acumen, maybe even works in the business there, maybe banking, something like that, that may help a little bit, those kind of things. Proximity really is not so much of a consideration, but we do get that question a lot, and that's normally the advice we give with regard to that.
Okay, next on the list.
Next on the list is that the next question is, or is that I understand that I need a power of attorney. And of course, I would like for Susan to be my executor, as we just discussed, but I think that I'll let John be my power of attorney because I don't want, you know, I'd like to name one over here and the other one over there.
Right.
This is not a good idea, Ben. Your executor and your power of attorney, your agent under your power of attorney should be the same person, if at all possible. This is what we're going to lead you toward. This is the advice that we will give. And the reason for that, Ben, is because, after all, your power of attorney will know your financial facts and circumstances. They will be the person most likely that might be involved at the end of life process. They will know, did the tax return get filed? Where the bank accounts happen to be? Is there anything special with an insurance claim on the house because of a storm that came through? All of your facts and circumstances of life, the power of attorney would very possibly be in the loop relative to those issues. And now to turn all of that over to a different executor, of course, requires that that executor catch up and know all of those very kinds of same things. And there might even be some duplication of effort. So if at all possible in our office, we are going to suggest that the agent under the power of attorney and the fiduciary under the will, namely your executor, be the same person. And that was the reason why, Ben.
Okay. Is there any concern that, you know, the fiduciary responsibility needs another set of eyes or to double check that, see that things had been going well?
Like, for instance, Co.
Right.
The checks and balances question.
Sometimes.
You know, what I would say about that is that, you know, if we're looking within the family and, you know, we're picking that best person, you know, my preference would normally be, you know, if we have the one child who clearly is going to be the best at this, then there's probably going to be a very high level of trust with regard to that.
Okay.
Now, in certain circumstances, we have to start looking outside of the family. Maybe we're having to name someone, you know, who's a friend in our church, or we're having to name our neighbor, something like that. Well, sometimes in those circumstances, you might want to name co's, meaning two, so they can both watch each other. But, you know, I can tell you in which we live with regard to estate administration, the requirements of the court are so strict now with regard to documentation, showing everything you did as the executor, supporting documents, bank records, those kind of things. Now, that doesn't touch and concern things like personal property, you know, things in the house, that kind of thing. I would say there's a higher level of scrutiny, and that should give most folks, you know, some comfort, you know, with regard to naming that single fiduciary.
Okay. What's next on the list, then?
Ben, next on the list is that, we're meeting with the client. This particularly is with a widow or widower. And, absolutely, I'm going to name my daughter, Sarah. She's just, you know, already involved in my life. She needs to be my executor. She'll be my power of attorney. And then the next question is, well, you know, Mrs. Jones, who will back Sarah up? Who will be the second? Who will be the alternate?
Right.
And of course, you know, many times Wes and I kind of get a blank stare at that point. Oh my goodness, I haven't thought about that, Cecil. Well, you know, we got to think about that.
Right.
Okay. We don't have to know it that instant, by the way. You can think about that for the next week or so and give me a call. But we are going to prepare a document that has sufficient alternates, mm-hmm. okay? Let's say, for instance, that we've got a 95-year-old really active little lady in the office, okay? Mm-hmm. And she's naming her, you know, 70-year-old daughter.
Right.
I mean, we need some alternates, mm-hmm. okay?
As people live longer, my children precede
you. We're seeing this more and more. So when you're thinking about these things, also think about not only who the best executor will be, no matter where they live, as mm-hmm. Wes just, of course, confirmed, but also who some alternates might be. Okay? Okay.
All right.
Next, contingencies. You know, we talk about alternate fiduciaries, meaning I'm going to name my daughter as my executor, but if my daughter is not available or is mm-hmm. predeceased, then who's next? Who's next? That's what Cecil just went through.
Right.
Also, other contingencies. Oftentimes, prospective clients come in and sit down with us and think, all right, this is what I want to happen, and I want everything to go to my spouse. Then I want it all to go to my two children, and that's it. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then there's no conversation or there's no thought process from the client about what happens if one of those two children has died.
Right.
You know, are there grandchildren? Do we want to set up a trust for these 3-year-old grandchildren in the will, which I refer to as a holdback trust?
Mm-hmm.
Even more importantly, let's say we have a second marriage
mm-hmm.
and we have, you know, children from previous marriages, and we have to talk about the possibility that the circumstances that exist today may not be the same circumstances when you pass away.
Right.
What happens if this child passes away? What happened if that child passed away? What if we have a special needs child out mm-hmm. there who, you know, is receiving SSI benefits, and we wanted to leave a certain part of our estate to that particular child? We want to leave it into a special needs trust.
Mm-hmm.
What happens when that child passes away and there's still assets in that trust? Where do those assets go? So you can see, Ben,
the unintended consequences.
This really gets pretty broad.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And, you know, there can be consequences, you know, based on the fact that people pass away, circumstances that take place in the twists and turns of our life.
Mm-hmm.
It's our job to, within reason, take into consideration those and plan for it so we're not left without a plan. We don't go 3, 4, 5, 6 generations down the line, but a couple generations is probably what's typical.
We're looking at top 10 estate questions to come up with Harvell and Collins, attorneys at law, and we'll have more to come in just a moment. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins. We're talking about top 10 issues that come up around estates, kind of some basic questions to ask.
Back to this contingency for a minute. And, of course, today is all about these common questions.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't think there's a single appointment that I have where this one doesn't come up relative to the contingencies. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting how it plays out. It's either A or Z, okay?
Yeah,
and
right.
The contingency is, well, I'm leaving everything equally to my children, but if a child dies, I would like for it to go to my child's husband. Or the alternative is, I want to make sure it does not go
mm-hmm.
to my child's husband. I want it to go to my daughter's children.
Mm-hmm.
It's always one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then, you know, one or the other. The most common procedure is for the assets to pass on down to the lineal line.
Right.
Which means that they would go to the daughter's children or the grandchildren or even great grandchildren. They would not go outside the lineal line over to the spouse.
Mm-hmm.
But there are times, there absolutely are, when a client is insistent upon leaving the share that would go to their child to the child's spouse.
Right.
They just think the absolute world of that son-in-law or mm-hmm. that daughter-in-law, and he'll take care of the children. This is how I want it written. I do not want it to go to my grandchildren yet. I want it to go to their father.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, Ben, this is a contingency. How do you, the thing that we don't want to happen is for this not to be addressed, as Wes just mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we know we're leaving everything to the three children, share and share alike, but what if one of those children is not living? And this is many times what people have not thought about, and we will bring it to their attention, and they will think about it, and then they will get back with us within a few days as to how they want their will drafted. But what's important is that there be an answer in the will,
right.
That it be clear. Because what does clarity mean?
Mm-hmm.
Clarity means no litigation. Clarity means no hold up at the clerk of court's office. Clarity means less cost, less delay. All of the things that all of us share in common with estate planning are those concepts. We mm-hmm. don't want our estates to be open for years and years and to cost tens of thousands of dollars and to have two or three lawyers involved. Okay.
Yes.
So it's important that we address these contingencies because those are the kinds of things that avoid that.
Okay.
All right.
Next on our list.
Number five.
Yeah. So next is, we oftentimes get the question, you know, Mr. Collins, Mr. Harvell, I understand or I've heard or I've read somewhere that I can't leave my children out of my will.
Mm-hmm.
Don't I have to give them $10 or a dollar or something?
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. isn't that the law, you know, that type
right.
of thing?
Sure.
Or,
that's a straight question.
So let's talk about that first, and then we'll talk about the spouse issue.
Right.
That's not the law. You may certainly disinherit your children if you wish to.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to leave them anything under North Carolina law, you know, in your will. However, it is a good idea to clearly identify mm-hmm. all of your children. Those would be your natural children. Those would be your adopted children, and also maybe even stepchildren.
Mm-hmm.
We like to be as inclusive as possible so that we don't leave the door open to a child coming forward saying, well, mom or dad, clearly they were under some influence, or clearly
right.
they didn't have the capacity because they forgot who I was.
Right.
Well, they
right.
can't make that argument in the event that the name is in the document
mm-hmm.
and we're identifying the person and we're making the conscious decision to disinherit one of the children. So, yes, you have that right to do that if you want to. North Carolina law really does not protect a child as it relates to an inheritance. Okay, now, spouse is a completely different situation. Under North Carolina law, you cannot disinherit your spouse unless there's an agreement, like a prenup
mm-hmm.
that indicates that there's a waiver of all type of claims, including through intestacy or elective share, any death claims, estate-related claims of the spouse, which, you know, if you have that, then mm-hmm. certainly that's going to act as a bar to recovery from the spouse. But if you don't have that, then the spouse has a right, even if you leave the spouse out completely in the will
mm-hmm.
and say, I don't want to leave anything to my spouse. Well, that spouse then has the right to make an elective share, which we've talked about on the program before.
Right, right.
Would receive potentially the claim through intestacy. There might be an election there about what mm-hmm. the spouse would want to take. So for those folks out there who have especially second marriages and there is an intent
mm-hmm.
maybe to leave your assets for the spouse, but not to the spouse. So if the spouse then dies, those assets all go directly to the spouse's children.
Mm-hmm.
Then the planning technique there is to put in place what's called an elective share trust so that you take care of the spouse
mm-hmm.
in the event you die. The assets are there for the spouse. The income is there for the spouse, but the spouse can't then direct them away from the deceased side of the family.
So, and again, that's for people who are legally married.
Correct.
Because, you know, not just the long, long-standing partner that you've lived with.
North Carolina does not recognize common law
right.
marriage.
Right.
So the relationship that's existed between two people long-term mm-hmm. is not recognized
right.
in the state of North Carolina.
All right. We'll have more to come in a moment here on Coastal Daybreak on the Talk Station, FM 107 and AM 1240 with Harvell and Collins and Let's Talk Legal. Our number is 800-818-2255, 247-7282 or 353-4674. And welcome back to Let's Talk Legal with Harvell and Collins, talking about our top 10 estate tips, common questions, and where are we now? I think we're at 6 or somewhere down there.
Well, we were at number 5, which mm-hmm. is, you know, that in the state of North Carolina, absolutely, you're able to leave your children out of the will. They mm-hmm. need to be, it's best that it be named and it be clear.
Right.
There's mm-hmm. not a specific amount of money, $10, $1,000, $1, mm-hmm. as Wes was mentioning, the common question. That's not what's critical. What's critical is that it be done in a clear way.
Right.
That I acknowledge that I have 3 children. As to my child, John, mm-hmm. I hereby make no provision for him.
Right.
That is
clear.
Sufficient and
okay.
clear. As Wes mentioned, this is great. Legal work for children, but when you move into disinheriting a spouse, mm-hmm. a whole nother body of law comes into play. We've talked about that mm-hmm. here on the program, the elective share, and our listeners can, you know, look on our radio program or the blog or whatever and find information on that. But you cannot just very simply just leave out your spouse
right.
in the state of North Carolina without there being, you know, a prenup or a well-drafted and very, you know, well-prepared postnuptial agreement.
Okay.
You were asking about the relationship, the long-term relationship. Wes has had some litigation files in that area. That, again, has to be analyzed very carefully. Sometimes assets will be titled mm-hmm. with jointly between people who have elected not to get married but yet have been in a long-term relationship. Sometimes there are promises to make a will
mm-hmm.
or there is caregiving that occurs
mm-hmm.
Based on promises. All of that body of law is out there. Case law is out there. And Wes has had a lot of experience with those cases. But the bottom line is that generally you are not going to be able to inherit based on, you know, a 15, 20, 25 year, however many year, significant relationship
yeah.
with your loved one.
Not in North Carolina.
Not in North Carolina.
Yeah, that was the old Palimony case. I think it was
Correct.
Lee Marvin.
You're gonna, if you're going to recover anything at all in those mm-hmm. cases, it's going to have to be based on some of these other kinds of cases. Wes, do you have any follow up on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, you really put yourself in a difficult situation if you have a long-term relationship, your mm-hmm. significant other passes away, and you're anticipating that you're going to receive something, an inheritance, you know, from yeah. that significant other, unless that person puts you in the will. I mean, the yeah. kind of claims that we've been able to make over the years, quantum merit, claims mm-hmm. based on partnership law, claims based on basically constructive fraud, and we've
right.
had a lot of success, but don't put yourself in that position if you can avoid it.
Find out more from folks at Harvell and Collins Attorneys at Law. Get that free consultation.